Journey to Topaz by Yoshiko Yoshida. Chapter 6. Home is a Horse Stall. Page 49. Crowded along the rail around the racetrack, watching for arriving friends, were hundreds of Japanese who had been evacuated earlier from the Bay Area. The first familiar face Yuki saw was Mr. Toda. She waved eagerly, and he waved back in an awkward sort of salute. Yuki waved again and again, feeling better just at the sight of someone she knew. As they got off the bus, they were directed to an area roped off beneath the grandstand where each family registered, filled out forms, and went through a brief medical inspection. The baggage they carried was inspected for contraband, and then they were assigned living quarters. Barrack 16, apartment 40, Ken read from the slip handed to him. Golly, Yuki said, impressed. We get an apartment? She, top of 50, had never lived in an apartment and found the prospect intriguing. She moved eagerly now, keeping close to Ken. Hey, Ken! It was Ken's classmate, Jim Hirari. Hey, Jim, Ken shouted back, and they pounded each other on the back as though they hadn't seen each other for 10 years. I'll help you find your quarters, Jim offered. But now Mother was surrounded by her church friends who had arrived two days earlier. She was bowing and greeting them, as though they were meeting on the sunny walk outside their church in Oakland. They quickly exchanged barrack numbers, and Mr. Toda and the minister promised to come visit them later.
I am in the bachelor's quarters here, Mr. Toda said rather dismally. I must share a room with 5 other men. It is a strange new life, he added, and he did not look happy.
Yuki was anxious to see where they would be living. Come on, Mama, she urged, and they quickly followed Ken and Jim down the racetrack. It had rained the night before, and the track was muddy and pocked with puddles. Yuki's new saddle shoes were soon covered with mud, and Mother's blue kid shoes were oozing with it. I'm glad I packed rubber boots for us, she remarked, and she held onto Yuki's arm to keep from slipping. As they walked along, Yuki saw that wherever there was room, tar-papered army barracks had been put up for the 8,000 Japanese who would soon be living there. Barrack 16, however, was not among them. Now Ken and Jim were leaving the northern end of the track and disappearing behind a cluster, page 51, of eucalyptus trees. When Yuki and Mother caught up with them, they were going up the wide ramp of a stable that stood about a foot above the ground. There was a sign tacked to a corner of the stable that read, Barrack 16. This isn't barracks at all, Yuki said, disappointed. It's just a dirty old stable. They followed Ken and Jim along the narrow walk that took them past a dozen stalls, each marked with a number, and then stopped in front of the one marked 40. Well, this is it, Jim said, nudging the door open. The stall was narrow and dark, with 2 small windows high up on either side of the door. It measured about 10 by 20 feet and was empty except for 3 army cots that lay folded on the floor. There were no mattresses or bedding of any kind. Dust and dirt and wood shavings still littered the linoleum that had been hastily laid over the manure-covered floor, and Ken sniffed at the lingering odor left by the former occupants. "Boy," he said, wrinkling his nose, "there's no mistaking who lived here before us." Yuki looked around the stall, feeling as though she'd been handed an empty ice cream cone. "This is an apartment?" she asked, dismayed. "That, my dear child, is what is known as a euphemism," Jim said to her. "You'll get used to things like that here." Yuki didn't know what Jim meant, but she didn't want to show her ignorance. She grinned at him and went to inspect the rear half of the stall, which was separated from the front by a Dutch door worn down with teeth marks. The walls had been, page 52, whitewashed so hurriedly that insects hadn't had time to escape, and their small white corpses still clung to the walls, along with cobwebs and horseshoes and rusty nails. Even Mother, who usually found something cheerful to say about most difficulties, seemed at a loss for words. "Well," she said at last, "the first thing we need to do is sweep out this place. Can you help us find a broom, Jim?" In the 2 days he had been in camp, Jim had quickly learned where to find things. "Sure," he said, "and you'll need some mattresses, too. Come on, Ken, let's go." The boys set up the cots before they left, putting up 2 in the inner half of the stall for Yuki and Mother, and 1 up in front for Ken. Yuki blew off the dust from the springs, and Mother brushed away what she could with her handkerchief. Then she sat down, took off her hat and gloves, and put them down on the cot beside her.
"Oh, Mama," Yuki said, laughing, "you sure didn't need a hat and gloves to come live in a horse stall."
Mother never went anywhere without a hat and gloves, not even to the corner to mail a letter. It was a habit she had acquired when she first arrived in America, and she had never changed since. She was a perfect lady, and Yuki supposed she always would be.
She smiled now at Yuki and brushed the dust from her hands.
"You're right, Yuki-chan," she said wistfully. "I guess I will hardly be needing a hat when I go out here."
Everyone who had been at Ten Foreign for more than a day seemed to be dressed in slacks and sweaters, wearing a bandana because of the dust and wind. Mother didn't even own a pair of slacks, and Yuki had never seen her put anything but a hat on her head.
Page 53. Second paragraph. "I'll lend you one of my scarves," she offered, and then she left Mother to rest on the cot and went out to investigate the surrounding area. The latrines and washrooms for their section were about 100 feet away, and when Yuki saw those, she knew that Mother would have much more to worry about than not having slacks or a scarf. None of the toilet cubicles had doors, and neither did the showers. There were no wash basins, but only a long tin trough that seemed more appropriate for horses. Yuki hurried back to their stall and shouted as she burst inside,
"Golly, Mama, you should see the latrines!"
She stopped when she saw Jim.
"Oh," she murmured, embarrassed.
But Jim just kept right on sweeping, and Ken said,
"That's okay, Yuki. We know what they're like. No doors."
Apparently, Jim had already told Ken all about the inadequacies of camp life. Yuki flopped down on one of the cots and bounced tentatively on the mattress the boys had just brought back. It rustled noisily and scratched her legs.
"It's stuffed with straw," she shouted. "This must have been left over from the horses."
But Jim quickly told her she was lucky to have any mattress at all.
"We got the last three they had," he explained.
Mother sighed. Already she was worried for the people who would come later and discover that there were no mattresses for them. Page 54. As Yuki sat squirming on the prickly straw mattress, she suddenly realized that she was famished.
"No wonder," she mused aloud. "We didn't have any lunch."
"That's right," Ken said wearily. "I thought I was beginning to grow weak." It was probably the first time in Ken's life that he'd gone for more than 4 hours without some food of some kind.
"Well, supper's at 5 o'clock, and you'd better get to the mess hall early," Jim warned them. "The lines are long, and it takes forever to get inside."
Then, glancing at his watch, he hurried to his own quarters to take a shower before supper. By the time Yuki, Ken, and Mother got to the mess hall and the grandstand, people were streaming toward it from all parts of the 100-acre camp. Already several long lines had formed, and those who had received their baggage were holding the plates and utensils they had been instructed to bring. They stood silently and patiently, waiting for the lines to move. The sun was going down now, and the wind whipped through the open stretches of the racetrack, sending swirls of dust in everyone's face. Yuki shivered and turned her back to the wind, huddling close to Mother to try to keep warm. It was almost an hour before they got inside the gloomy mess hall and to the serving table. A white-aproned man was using his fingers to put 2 canned sausages on each person's plate from a dishpan piled high with sausages. Another man gave each of them 1 boiled potato and a piece of bread.
"Is this all?" Ken asked.
The men nodded silently. At home, Ken would have considered this only an appetizer. The enormous room was filled with wooden picnic tables, but with 5,000 people milling about, it was hard to find a vacant table.
Page 55. At last they found one they could share with an old man and a young family with 2 crying babies. When they sat down, however, Yuki no longer felt like eating. The sight of the sausages heaped high in the dishpan hadn't helped. Mother must have felt the same, for Yuki saw her quietly slip her sausages on Ken's plate and take only a few bites of her potatoes. They left as soon as Ken had finished eating, walking carefully along the dark, muddy track. Ten Foreign wasn't equipped for nighttime use, and there were few lights to help them find their way. Their small stall now looked more bleak than ever, and the single electric bulb that dangled from the ceiling made only a forlorn effort to brighten the darkness. Their stall faced north, and the cold wind that blew in from the crevices around the windows and doors made the light bulb sway and cast eerie shadows on the wall. Yuki pulled her coat tightly around her and sat hunched on Ken's cot.
"I'm beginning to hate this place already," she murmured.
"You know what I'd like right now?" Ken said dreamily. "A nice, juicy steak, medium rare, with onions on the side and a big baked potato full of sour cream, and a huge piece of apple pie with ice cream and..."
"Stop it!" Yuki shrieked. "You're giving me hunger pains."
Mother opened her purse and felt in all its corners.
"I don't even have any candy," she said dismally.
It was a sad day for Mother when she couldn't offer something good to eat or to provide her family some comfort. She looked helpless and frail as she glanced around the stall, unable to find anything in it that would offer some cheer.
Page 56.
"If only our baggage would come," she said, "I could at least make some hot tea." And then, as though her thoughts had miraculously produced the fact itself, they heard a truck pull up outside the stable.
"Hey, Sakani family," a voice shouted. "Does this monster belong to you?"
It was their camp bundle. Ken rushed to the door to claim it, even though he was embarrassed to admit it.
"Right here," he called out.
As soon as he had wedged the big bundle through the narrow door, Ken untied the ropes, and they quickly pulled out all the things Mother had packed inside. Every familiar and useful object looked like an old friend. Yuki ran to the washroom to fill the kettle with water. Ken hooked up the hot plate, and Mother began putting the blankets and sheets on the cots. Yuki sat close to the hot plate, watching its coils glow with heat and feeling better as the water in the kettle began to hum. She jumped when she heard a knock at the door. It was Mr. Toda, shivering without a coat in the brisk night air.
"I've brought you a little something," he said to Yuki, holding out a small bag of peanuts.
Yuki couldn't have been happier if it were a sack of gold.
"Oh, Mr. Toda," she squealed, "you're wonderful," and she gave the surprised old man a hug that embarrassed him.
"It's only a bag of peanuts," he said sheepishly.
Yuki divided it carefully, pouring a few into each of their palms. Ken popped his handful into his mouth and swallowed the whole thing down in one delicious gulp. But Yuki ate one peanut at a time, chewing carefully and slowly savoring each small bite.
Page 58.
Mother was happy now, making tea and serving it in the cup she had packed.
"Well, here she are.
Well, here we are," she said, smiling at Mr. Toda, "having tea together, just as we used to at home."
"Ha," Mr. Toda answered with a sad half-smile. "It's hardly like being in your home, Mrs. Sakani."
And even as he spoke, they could hear the voices of the people who lived all around them, for the walls between each stall lacked a foot from the ceiling, and every sound, except for the smallest whisper, traveled easily to the next stall.
"No fighting with Ken here," Yuki thought, listening. "No secrets at all." And she popped the last peanut into her mouth, recalling with sudden longing Mr. Nelson's delicious turkey dinner.